listening. Thank you for downloading. You're with us here at the Clock and Talk, a World Cup special podcast, where me and the boys are going to talk World Cup for the next couple of weeks, coming into Russia. Plenty to talk about, so let's get straight into it. Tony, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Just eagerly anticipating this Champions League final, because I feel like I haven't seen any top quality football for, it seems like, about 3 years. It's probably been about a week. Just holding on for that and the Championship playoff final today.
You got a couple of predictions?
I hope Real Madrid. I really, really hope Real Madrid. And I think Villa will win. I think they have more big game experience.
Well, I thought as an Englishman you'd want Liverpool.
Absolutely not.
And Schwinn, how are you, buddy?
Bonjour, mes amis. I'm doing very well. I don't understand the logic behind being English and having to support Liverpool. I've seen a lot of people talking about that on Twitter, but obviously not. I'm also going for a Real Madrid win and Villa, because I don't know who they're playing.
Fulham.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. That's right. Well, then Fulham, because I'm a big Ryan Sessegnon fan, so why not Fulham?
Fair enough. Yeah, I've got to go Villa. And I've got to go Liverpool. Don't know why.
Ouch.
Probably Mo Salah. I do like Mo Salah from when he was at Roma, but yeah, I'm not a Real Madrid fan anyway. Okay, you reckon it'll be a high scoring game, boys? Champions League, so?
I think everyone's expecting it to be, just because between Ronaldo and Salah, they've scored about 4 million goals between them this season. And then, obviously, the supporting cast of people like Bale, Firmino, Mane, Isco have all got goals in them. So everyone's expecting that. But these games sometimes are quite cagey, because everyone knows that they could concede at any time. They go the other way and they go quite negative. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a tight game, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it was 4-3.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You got a score prediction, Schwinn?
5-4 to Real. I'm hoping for a high-scoring game.
Yeah, right, eh? I'll go 3-2 Liverpool. Are we expecting attacking-style football on the other game, Tony? Aston Villa, Fulham? I haven't seen much of it.
Fulham are quite open and attacking. Pretty much all of their players are footballers. I think that one of their centre backs is like 5'8", so you can tell that they're more of a footballing side. I think Villa, with Steve Bruce in charge and people like John Terry and a lot of old experienced heads in the game, will keep it tight at the back. I mean, they've got a lot of players that know how to win things. So that's why I expect Villa to win, just because of that big game experience. But I think Fulham will try and open the game up, and Villa will probably be quite tight at the back and not so much hit them on the counter-attack, but just make sure they don't concede, pretty much, I think, is what Villa will try and do.
Yeah, okay. Nice. Okay, boys, let's get into this World Cup, because Schwinn's may have to do the bolt. He's touring around the world again. Where are you going this afternoon, Schwinn?
Well, I am right now in Monaco, and I thought I will be here this weekend, but it seems like there might be a chance for me to make it to Kiev later tonight. So hopefully I can wrap up this podcast in time and not bolt earlier, but that might be the case, and then travel to Kiev.
How's this bloke's form? So he goes to the Champions League final, and then he's going to the Monaco Formula One tomorrow. What a fucking life.
It doesn't come around a whole lot often, mate. It's been a while, so making the most of it.
Good on you, mate. Good on you. Okay, let's get into, boys, the road to Russia. So Group A, we've got Russia, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Uruguay. Tony, give us your two who will go through out of that group, mate.
Uruguay will win the group. I'm torn between Egypt and Russia. I don't think Egypt will do anywhere near as well as everyone expects them to. I don't particularly rate Russia either, but you do have to factor that they're on home soil and there may be some chemicals floating about for anyone that beats them. So I will go Russia. And if Putin's listening, do not kill me. Thank you.
Schwinn?
I have Uruguay topping the group as well, and Egypt coming second.
Okay, well, I've gone, obviously, Uruguay, they'll top the group. I've actually gone Saudi Arabia. I think high expectations on Mo Salah for Egypt. I think he'll have a good game. They've also got El Neni, like a good tournament. They've also got El Neni. I just don't think it'll be enough to get through the group. For me, Russia on home soil, but as we do our predictions later, boys, with our worst and weakest team, dark horses and disappointing on the tournament, I've got a surprise in there too. So for me, it's Saudi Arabia and Uruguay. So Group B, Tony, we've got Portugal, Morocco, Spain or Iran.
I'm amazed that you just pronounced a 14 group and got at least two of them wrong. Your pronunciation literally knows the bounds.
What did I say there?
Iran, not Iran, and Morocco, not Morocco. Morocco is like a drink. I was laughing so much at your pronunciation, I forgot who's in the group. Was it Spain and Portugal?
Spain and Portugal, yes.
Yeah, Spain and Portugal in that order.
Yeah.
It'll be a really interesting game. I'm not sure. I'm assuming it's going to be the third game in the group. I've not checked, which will be a bit annoying because it could be a dead rubber. But if not, I look forward to that game. I think that could be obviously the game that decides the group. But I think Spain, just on all-round ability, should beat them. But I would never rule out any side that contains Cristiano Ronaldo.
Schwinn?
Yeah, it's very hard to disagree with this one. Spain tops the group for me, and Portugal a comfortable second.
Yeah, I'm the same with that one, boys. Group C, we've got France, Australia, Peru, and Denmark. Tony?
So Australia are going to come bottom, I don't think. They might get 1 point if they're lucky. So I think, who was it again?
France, Peru, and Denmark.
France.
You just wanted to have a France shot at Australia.
Yeah, basically, I think France will win it from Denmark coming second. But I think Denmark could be a bit of a surprise package in this tournament. They've got some very good players. If Eriksen plays the way he was the first 6 months of the season, he's going to be a danger to anyone, and I don't think anyone expects anything of Denmark. So I wouldn't be surprised if they cause a few surprises, but I still back France in the group.
Okay, Schwinn?
The same. France to top the group. Denmark comes second.
Okay, I'm going to go different, boys, of course, because of Australia. So I'm going to go France to top the group. I'm going to go Peru at the bottom. I'm hoping Australia can get a win over Denmark and sneak in for second. I know it's a tough chance, but yeah, that's what I'm running for that one. Group D, Argentina, Croatia, Iceland, Nigeria. Tony?
Yeah, I think this is probably one of the most evenly matched groups. I think it will probably be Argentina followed by Croatia, but I wouldn't be surprised to see any one of them four teams to go through. Obviously, 2 years ago, I'd have said, Iceland are no-hopers, but we've seen what they've done before. Mm. I don't expect them to do the same again. So I'd probably go Argentina, Croatia, Nigeria, Iceland. But I wouldn't be surprised if it was any one of Argentina plus any one of the others. Nothing would really surprise me. I think it's quite evenly matched.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn?
Again, I have no sort of upset coming out of this group. I know it's one of the tougher ones along with the next one, but Argentina, I think, will go a long way in the tournament. I think they'll go all the way to the semifinals. And Croatia, I think, although the runner-up of this group plays the winner of the next group, so in that case, they would play France, and then I would have France over them. So Argentina number one and Croatia number two.
Yeah, I think you're on money on the Argentina, Croatia for me as well, boys. Group E, Brazil, Costa Rica, Switzerland, and Serbia. Tony?
So I have Brazil topping this group pretty comfortably. I'm torn between Serbia and Switzerland. Switzerland are just a very solid tournament side. They're never amazingly exciting, but they don't concede a lot of goals. They tend to just get the job done when they're supposed to. Serbia, you could potentially argue, have a better 11 on paper, whereas Switzerland have got not many stars. I mean, obviously, they've got Granit Xhaka. Yeah, obviously, they've got Granit Xhaka and Jadon Sakiri and a couple of other sort of semi-household names. Whereas I think Serbia have got more names, but Switzerland just seem to be a better unit. So I think they'll probably scrape by. So I think it'll be Brazil, Switzerland and Serbia. Yeah. Saying that, Costa Rica done really well in the last World Cup, and no one expected that of them. They topped the group that contained the mighty England. So again, could they be a surprise package? I don't expect it, but I didn't expect it last time either.
Okay, Schwinn?
Ditto. Brazil to top the group. And Stefan Lichtsteiner, who could be a gunner, and I think will be traveling to the tournament, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure. And Granit Xhaka representing the Arsenal. So Switzerland to come second.
Yeah, I'm Brazil, Switzerland for me as well. Okay, Group F, Tony, we've got Germany, Sweden, Mexico, and South Korea.
I think Germany are going to be a lot of people's favourites, so we've got to go with them topping the group. I can't see Korea doing anything. Mexico and Sweden, again, another tough one. Mexico are another side a bit like Switzerland, that you look at their team on paper and you wouldn't say it's amazing, there's no star players, but they seem to always be able to pull it together and do well. I'm going to go for Sweden just because the competition's in Europe. I think if it was in South America, I would go for Mexico. Mm-hmm. But I think just because they're more used to the climate, I'll go to Germany, Sweden, Mexico, Korea.
Okay, Schwinn?
So this is also one of the more challenging groups, especially when you look for the second place. For me, Mexico might just edge it. Of course, Germany tops the group, but I think Mexico, when it comes to the tournaments, they find an extra gear and they'll make something of this.
Yeah, I'm the same, mate. I'm going to go Germany, Mexico with you, mate. Just looking who Sweden's got there. Forsberg, Lindorff. Ibrahim, he's retired, isn't he, from Sweden?
He wanted to play, but they said no.
Oh, they said no, okay.
Yeah, because he retired and they qualified without him. And then when they qualified, he said, I'll play. And they lightly rejected.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to get Germany, Mexico. Group G. So we've got England, Belgium, Panama, and Tunisia.
Not bad.
Where is that? Tunisia.
North Africa.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna assume somewhere near Morocco, seeing as their flags are very similar.
Okay.
And Algeria, because their flags are pretty similar as well, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Okay, Tony, who you got in there, mate?
On paper, Belgium are very good, but football's played on grass, and Belgium tend to disappoint at major tournaments.
Mm.
So I'm going to have Belgium to top the group, but I really wouldn't be surprised if they fall flat on their faces. So, I think Belgium followed by England would be my prediction, but, I mean, like, England are comical at major tournaments. Well, we're just comical at all times. Belgium flatter to deceive at tournaments. I don't know enough about Panama or Tunisia. I expect them not to be great, but as I said, I expected Costa Rica to not be great in the last World Cup, and they were very good. So I'll go Belgium, England, but I wouldn't be surprised if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, well, Panama, they're saying Gabriel Gomez or somebody from Seattle Sounders, Torres. Yeah, all they've got there. So, Schwinn, what's your thoughts, mate?
The same, Belgium and England. But I would like to echo Tony's point about Belgium. And I think, you know, they will, you know, we'll obviously come to different categories we had picked out for this. But I think they'll be a big disappointment this tournament. They have a lot of talent, but I have them being knocked out in the next round against Poland. So I think that's one team to keep an eye out on, who has a lot of expectations and a lot of quality, but I think they'll fall flat on their face. But they will top this group. I think there's not much denying that.
Yeah, I'm going to go Belgium and Panama. Nah, I think England will come in second, but geez, they can bottle it too. They're like Belgium.
No, Belgium have good players.
Belgium have, yeah, true.
We're not like Belgium.
You're not exactly like Belgium. Yeah, England second, Belgium first. Group H, Poland, Colombia, Senegal, and Japan.
Who is that, sorry?
Senegal.
That's the one. You definitely just said seagull, which is a bird. Seagull. But yeah, Senegal did.
Senegal.
Again, we're going to go into these categories later, but I think in some ways this is the easiest group. It's got no star quality, but they're all quite evenly matched. So it's the group you'd most likely to be in, but it's probably quite a hard group to get out of because there's four pretty evenly matched teams. It's a nightmare to call. Japan seems to always work well at tournaments. They have high work rate, high intensity. Colombia traditionally do well. They've got some very good players. I'd probably go Colombia and then Poland, and I know Schwinn's going to go Poland to come second. But I wouldn't be surprised if any two of them four got through the group, to be honest.
Schwinn?
Yeah, Colombia and Poland for me. I do want Senegal to make it out of this group, and I want to see more of them because I think they have the coolest kits coming into the tournament, so I'd like to see more of them. But when it comes to these tournaments, then the experience, the European pedigree to an extent, I think that helps a lot. And Poland do have Robert Lewandowski, who in the qualifiers especially was unstoppable. I think he scored the maximum number of goals and was able to dig his team out from a lot of murky situations. So I'd bank on him scoring a lot of goals, especially against the likes of Japan and Senegal.
Yeah, I'm going to go Colombia. Fuck, it's tough, isn't it? Senegal, Japan. Who we got for Senegal? Mane, he plays there. I'm going to go Japan, boys. Colombia and Japan. I just think...
Oh, left field.
Yeah, just a bit of left field. Lewandowski, yeah, okay, he's at Poland, but that's about it for me there. So.
Chesney.
Oh, yeah.
Krakowiak. They have a decent team. I mean, they have Milik as well.
I think all four of these teams are decent. I think this is the hardest group to call. As I said, it's probably the easiest group in terms of what you'd want to be put into. Mm. If you were a star nation, for example, but I think that they're so evenly matched that I wouldn't be surprised if any two of the four go through.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm going to stick with Colombia and Japan, boys, just to throw a curveball in it, something different. Okay, so that's our predictions for who's going through to the groups, and please let us know what your predictions are for the groups on clockend_talk on Twitter, or you can hit us up on Facebook as well, clockendtalk. Boys, we put out a tweet during the week where we actually picked a couple of categories. Tony, weakest team. Schwinn put together this list for us all because me and Tony are too lazy, so we just let Schwinn do it. So, worst and weakest team, Tony?
There's so many of the Arab nations that I don't know anything about, or not even just Arab, but if I'm honest, I don't know anything about Saudi Arabia, Iran, just going through the list now, sorry. Saudi Arabia, Iran, Panama, Tunisia. I don't know nearly anywhere near enough or anything at all about them. So I'm going to pick one of them four just because I don't know. That doesn't mean I'm saying they're a bad team. It's just I don't know of them being any good. So I'm going to go Saudi Arabia just because traditionally you don't really hear of them playing football. And I don't know who they would have qualified with, who was in their qualifying zone. They're in a group with Egypt, which means I'd imagine they came through a different qualifying zone. They wouldn't have come through Africa. So I'm guessing they would have qualified with Iran. And I don't know, who did they beat? I don't know if Iraq have a team because there's wars there constantly. So I don't know who they're playing on a normal basis to get any form of level. Schwinn may be able to enlighten us on this.
Schwinn, who's your worst or weakest team, or can you enlighten us? I'm just having a look. So they qualified Saudi Arabia, secure their place in the World Cup finals for the first time since 2006 with a second place finish in the AFC qualifying group behind Japan. They beat them 1-0. Qualified Japanese in their final group match controversy goal.
So they would have beat the likes of China.
They also beat Australia as well. Yeah, I forgot about that.
That ain't odd.
They finished ahead of us, actually. I don't know if they did beat us. We did play them, actually. I can't remember. Anyway, one of our Aussie followers will let me know. Schwinn?
Yeah, I mean, I follow the Asian qualifiers a bit because, as our listeners would know, my motherland is the country of India, where obviously cricket, you know, takes over every sport in its popularity. But football has been growing over the last 20, 25 years in India. And there is a lot of popularity that now has surrounded the sport. So it's easy to find streams and you know, different ways of finding and watching games. And one of the games I watched was, of course, India versus Saudi Arabia. Now, for me, they would be the weakest team coming into the tournament, despite being in what I would assume is, you know, for me, the easiest group, Group A, because I think Uruguay has a very clean pass. But the other three, I think it's pretty close amongst them. But when you look at the teams on paper, I think they're the weakest coming into the tournament, despite having, you know, Mo Salah and some of those likes in there. But Saudi Arabia does have a couple of players. I think you mentioned one before we started recording, Tez, that I'm forgetting. And, of course, there's Fahad Al-Muwallad, who is, you know, one of their attacking talents. And he was very, very good against India, both the games, in fact, when India played them. So I'm not sure whether it was a qualifier or a friendly. So I think someone can correct me on that. But I remember watching, you know, the home and away leg for that at some point. But you know, when you look at some of the other teams in the tournament, even someone like Iran, I think they have more of a footballing pedigree than Saudi Arabia. And the likes of Panama, you know, who even beat the United States in all its glory and stopped them from qualifying. So there's something about these teams that clicks when it comes to the grindstone. I'm just not sure whether Saudi Arabia has that in it.
Yeah, okay, so you're going Saudi Arabia as well, are you?
Yeah.
Okay. I've actually... the worst and weakest team. I didn't go so
Australia.
Much. And fuck off, cunt. Settle down. Get back in your box. I actually went Russia as the host. I thought to myself, had they not been the host, would they be in the World Cup? So, because coming into, obviously, and looking back at who they played. You know, in total, they've played 19 matches since the Euros in 2016 and won only six of them against Ghana, Romania, Hungary and New Zealand. They beat Moscow and Korea. So I was...
Wait, they beat Moscow?
They beat Moscow, yeah.
Russia beat Dynamo
Moscow, they said here.
So they're playing one of their own club sides?
What must be, yeah. Yep. This was just a friendly. So these are just the friendlies they've had. Yeah. So you know, it wasn't, and I thought, well, had they not be the host nation, would they be even in the World Cup? So that's how I type of come to it. Not necessarily the weakest or the worst team, but would they be in the World Cup if they weren't the host nation, was the way I went. And I didn't know enough about Saudi Arabia or all these other teams that you boys were talking about. So that's why I've also put Russia in there. Next one was the dark horse, Tony.
Let me see if I actually put an answer to this online, because I don't want to say something different from what I did.
Okay. I didn't.
So let me just look through who I think will cause a bit of a shock. This is fascinating listening, just me scrolling down. I'm going to go Denmark.
Denmark?
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Would that mean Denmark beats Argentina for you in the round of 16?
See, my issue is I haven't looked at who plays who after, but I just... Mm-hmm. As I said, I don't think anyone expects anything of Denmark, and I think they could run both France and Argentina close, if not beating one of them.
Well, yeah, because if they top the group somehow, Test, but if Denmark tops the group, then that means they would play the runner-up from Group D, which could be Croatia, and that could be a fascinating tie because Denmark surely does, you know, stand a bigger chance against Croatia than they do against Argentina.
Yeah, I mean, the other one, I'm torn between Denmark and Switzerland, to be honest. I mean, in qualifying, Switzerland won all of their games but one. They beat Portugal, but then they lost to Portugal, and on the head-to-head or goal difference, they had to end up qualifying, and they beat one of the islands. I think it was Northern Ireland they beat in qualifying. So they don't lose often. They're not used to losing. And as I said, they're just kind of efficient when it comes to these tournaments, despite not having big names. Again, I don't know who they would have after if they come second to Brazil. I'm not sure what their
Germany.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't expect them to beat Germany. So both the teams, I think, could surprise people. Both got horrible ties if they come second in their group.
Okay, yeah, well, Denmark. That'll be interesting. So 26th of June, you've got Australia, Peru, and then you've got Denmark, France. That's the last game for that group. So that could be very interesting when it gets down to that last group, because if Australia, and I predict they will beat Peru, it'll just be a matter of how many France beat Denmark by. But then again, you're saying they are your dark horse. Just had a quick look, Ladbrokes, and I'm not sponsored by Ladbrokes or anything, but it's just the first betting agency I jumped on. Denmark at $81 to win the tournament, and Switzerland was the other one you said, or Sweden?
Switzerland.
Switzerland at $101.
Yeah, again, the draw is going to play a big part, and also you can't even pronounce a bookie that you use quite often. Like, is there any words you can say properly, and we'll just restrict the podcast to them words?
Ladbrokes. Why? What do you call it over there?
Ladbrokes. That's what it's called.
Ah, well, it's Ladbrokes over here, so Ladbrokes. You call it Ladbrokes.
Well, that's what it's called, yeah.
Fucking 1-0, you clown, not fucking 2.
See, what we do is we have this thing where we call it by its actual name. It tends to work quite well.
Well, it come to Australia and announced Ladbrokes. Not Ladbrokes. Clear digger. Anyway. You'd never last over here, and I'd never last over there. Schwinn, who's your dark horse?
Yeah, I mean, I'd probably last in both countries, but I think that's a topic for a separate day. For me, it has to be Poland. As I said, I think they'll come second in the group, but that means they'll face Belgium in all likelihood in the next round. And I think they'll get the better of Belgium. I think that's where their run will probably stop, because that would mean playing Brazil in the next round if Brazil do beat Mexico in the round of 16. So I think that's where the dark horse stops its race. But I don't believe a lot in Belgium. And maybe it's down to Martinez. And consequently, I also believe in Poland. So I think, you know, that tie is very well balanced for me, even though it might not be on paper. So I'll definitely go for Poland.
What do you got? 80. The Poland, 41-1. My dark horse isn't as much as your guys, because I've gone Uruguay. On the back of Cavani and Luis Suarez. So that's,
yeah. Yeah, I've not seen Uruguay's route, but I've seen a lot of people tipping them for the quarters and semis. So I'm assuming they must have an easy route. I know their group's pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I think
they will play the runner-up from Group B, which would be Portugal, according to all of us.
That's not easy. As I said, I'm surprised, because I've seen a lot of people say minimum quarters for them, but Portugal in the last 16 is not the most pleasant tie.
No, it's not. And if they do somehow beat Portugal, then in all likelihood, they would be playing France in the quarterfinal.
Yeah,
or the winner of France versus Croatia. So that's also where probably their run would stop.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very hard to pick a dark horse, because you know what, you can't fluke a World Cup. In like say a Champions League where there's a draw. Like, no disrespect to Liverpool, they've done brilliant to get to the final, but they've had the much easier side of the draw. If you look at the teams Real Madrid have played, and you look at the teams Liverpool have played, they've had a nice draw. Whereas in the World Cup, you can't really seem to fluke it. The draw's worked out in advance, and it's not random. So at some point, you're going to have to beat at least two top sides to get anywhere, if not three.
Absolutely.
Schwinn, every year I see people talking about Belgium as a dark horse. So they're in with England. We're saying Belgium top that group. Who do they continue on according to our predictions?
So they would play the runner-up of Group H, and that would be Poland for me, and that would be Japan for you.
So that's not a bad draw, is it? Against Poland.
No, it's not. But in the quarterfinal, if they do get the better of Poland / Japan, they would face the winner of Brazil versus Mexico, according to the draw I picked out, for example. Yeah. And the one you picked out as well. So that again would be a fascinating tie. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not a big Brazil supporter by any imagination. And if Brazil do face Belgium, then I'd be supporting Belgium all the way. But I just don't buy into the Belgium team for some reason. I haven't seen a whole lot of them. So it's nothing personal or, you know, it's nothing professional either. It's just an instinctual feeling that I have that they won't do as well. And again, it comes down to the manager for me.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Okay. So our next question was, yeah, I said my dark horse. Yep. Disappointment of the tournament, Tony.
Yeah, I think when Schwinn asked this list of questions, I think he meant teams, but I answered this as in a player. I think everyone expects way too much from Salah. He's had a brilliant year. He's had an unbelievable year. And if he tops it tonight by winning the Champions League, but you can't criticise him at all. But he's not going to have the players around him that he has at Liverpool for Egypt. And I think like people have mentioned him for the Golden Boot. And if he wins a Golden Boot as an Egypt player, he deserves any award that they can give him in football. But I don't see him getting anywhere near that. Bear in mind, they could also only be playing three games because they're not guaranteed to get through their group. So if you win the Golden Boot playing for Egypt and only playing three games, then you've done some form of magic. But for me, I expect him to... I think it's harsh if people see it as a disappointment, but people are building him up so much that if he doesn't do anything, it would be seen as a disappointment.
Okay. Schwinn, your disappointment of the tournament in the disappointing player, mate?
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Kevin De Bruyne, and it all traces back to Belgium. And it's nothing against KDB. I think he's a fantastic player. For me, he was better than Mo Salah this past season in the Premier League, especially with some of the passes he played and some of the plays he strung together. But, you know, again, it comes down to the manager. It comes down to the system, and I just don't think he'll be able to step up his game as he did in the Premier League.
Okay. Look, my disappointment of the tournament, I'm going to go, and I may get a bit of criticism off my Aussie mates, but I'm going to go Tim Cahill because there's a lot of expectations on him down here to perform. McCollum, he got left out of the squad, and they say it was because of Tim Cahill. And look, with all due respect, I think that Tim Cahill probably deserved his spot there, but if he doesn't score a couple of goals, I think he's going to be a big disappointment for Australia. So that's the only reason I've gone Tim Cahill in that. Now, a lot of us down here, I wouldn't say a lot of us, but, you know, Australia expectations are that we do, as I said, and beat Denmark. A few realists are saying it's not going to happen, but... a lot of Aussies are behind us, behind the team, so Tim Cahill for me will have to provide some goals for us to get through. Tony, your easiest group, mate?
See, this all for me depends on whose point of view you're looking at it from. So if you was a top nation to go into a group, like to become the fifth team, as I said, I think the Colombia, Japan, Poland, Senegal group's really equal, but none of them are a top side, whereas a lot of the others have at least one team I'd consider to be a top seed in it. Probably, I mean, look, yeah, the easiest group is Group A: Uruguay, Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Egypt. Again, I think of the seeds, I'm assuming Uruguay were, they're the weakest of the seeds, probably between them and Colombia. But then beneath them, I think Colombia have got harder teams than Saudi Arabia, Russia and Egypt. So for me, probably Group A.
Yep. Schwinn?
The same, Group A.
Yeah, I've also gone Group A as well, boys. Group of Death, Tony?
The Argentina group fascinates me because I haven't seen what Iceland done at the Euros. Croatia have always been a good, solid side. Nigeria have done well recently, and there was obviously Argentina in the group, and Nigeria beat them. I know it was a friendly, and everyone keeps banging on about it, but you can only go on what's happened recently, and Nigeria did beat them. So that group, again, I don't know if there's any staunch group of deaths like we've had in the past. I mean, just in the last World Cup, England's group was England, Uruguay, Italy, and Costa Rica, and Costa Rica ended up going through. I don't think there's any group that as loaded as much as they have been in previous years. But I think the Argentina group is probably the toughest one, which is Group D.
Group D, yep. I've also gone Group D. Schwinn?
And so have I.
Okay, so that was pretty easy. Okay, now where will your nation get to? A state nation and when they go... State the nation and when do they go out? Tony?
Yeah, so obviously I'm English. You may have been able to tell throughout the season. There's been a few hints. For me, I think if we... I would have said if we go out in the last 16, that's all I expect. I don't rate our manager. I don't think he's picked the best squad. I think there's a lot wrong with England. But Schwinn just said, I think if we finish second in our group, we get the winner of the Colombia group, which, as I said, I've spoke about, is quite even. You'd probably expect Colombia to win it. And if England were playing Colombia in the last 16... I'd be hopeful of a win. I wouldn't say I'd expect it. It's not like you're playing minnows, but that's probably one of the best draws you can get if you're in. If you come second in the group, the best draw you can probably get is a winner of Group H or the winner of Group A. So I would say last 16, but having seen that, I'd probably be a bit disappointed to lose to Colombia if it does come to that. But I will say last 16.
Okay. Now, Schwinn asked these questions, and I'm absolutely confused how he's going to answer this. So anyway... Let's see what you're saying.
Well, this question was included by Tony, wasn't it? This was not a part of my...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Schwinn can go, I'm now German.
Well, that has been the case. Well, look, both of my countries that I can call my countries, India and the U.S., have obviously not made it this far. India's never made it this far, so I wasn't hoping for them to either. Well, expecting, rather. But I've always been a Germany supporter for the last, since the 2004 World Cup, 2002 World Cup, the first one I visited, attended.
Yeah.
And I think they'll win it. You know, from what I see, they'll have to play Switzerland in the round of 16, possibly Colombia after that, followed by Argentina in the semifinal and Brazil in the final. That's the path I see for them. And I see them winning it. I think on a technical level, on an experiential level, I think there's no one that competes with them. And I could be wrong, obviously, but for me, they'll win the lot.
Okay, so you're jumping on the German bandwagon.
But just been on for a while, mate. He's also currently in Monaco, so if they win it, he'll be claiming he's French as well. So it literally doesn't matter. Well, whoever wins it, Schwinn's going to claim to be a resident of there, put on a pit on an accent.
Well, you guys got to decide whether I'm a fence sitter or I'm a bandwagon supporter. I can be both.
I think you sit on the fence until someone wins it, and then you jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah. You jump on that bandwagon and straight off that fence, mate. Absolutely.
Wow.
As it's going past, Schwinn's hitching a ride. okay, I'm obviously Australian. You can probably tell. Now, I think we can beat Peru, boys. I think it's going to come down to how much we lose to by France and how much Denmark lose by France. You know, obviously, if it's a 6-0 loss to France, then we're in the shit. Because... Look, I don't know if we'll beat Denmark, but I'd like to think we can get a draw against Denmark. So that may put us through on goal differences. That's probably the best scenario I'm hoping for. Obviously, the best scenario would be Denmark, but realistically, to beat Denmark, but realistically, the draw is probably the better option. So, yeah, it just depends on how many we lose by France, and I hope Denmark lose... by France by a few goals as well. So
I'm not saying this to piss you off. I genuinely think you'll finish bottom of that group.
You reckon Peru? You reckon we're worse than Peru?
Peru came through the South America qualifying, which is no joke because it's like a league format where everyone plays everyone. I think you've got to respect any team that comes through there, even if it's a lesser nation. the way they have to qualify. I think anyone that qualifies through there is serious. You think Chile? They came above Chile.
Like, yeah, I'm just looking. Peru, so they went from an awful start to an awesome finish. Oh, okay. Their biggest strength is the danger man. What are they saying? I'm just scrolling, reading. A star player.
Guerrero.
Flamengo. Well, I'm saying we can beat them, fuckers. I reckon we can beat them. They qualify for... They went through qualifying late run of form allowed them to return the World Cup after 36-year absence. After 7 games, they had managed only 4 points. And with only 5 games left, they were stuck in 8th place out of the 10 teams.
No, they beat... So they came 5th in the South America, which is... It means you have to qualify. You have to play a qualifier.
Paraguay... Okay. Yeah, right. Well, look, I'm hoping Peru. I'm hoping we can beat Peru, and I'm hoping we can get a draw against Denmark. And I'm happy. I'm a happy lad. We get to the round 16, and we're Gonskis, boys. Yeah, all over. Just out of curiosity, Schwinn, who would we come across if we got second?
I think you can beat them, Argentina. Okay. It's only Messi, Aguero, Dybala, Di Maria, Higuain.
They got nothing on us. Okay. Okay, so that's me. Tony, best player.
Griezmann. I think he's gonna start every game for a team I think are gonna go very far. They're loaded with attacking players, which allows him to play through his strengths, and where he'll get involved more. He's not a 9, he'll play more as a 10-ish, so he'll get involved more, which means he'll be involved in the build up and probably the finishing of chances as well. He'll probably be on set pieces, or if not definitely penalties for France, which obviously they could get a few, and their group will allow for a lot of goals to be scored. And I think people that win these tend to be near the top scorer as well. I mean, Messi got it last time because of the advertising, but everyone knows James was the player of the tournament, and he played as a 10, similar. I think he was a top scorer or a joint top scorer. So, and as I said, I think there's a lot of similarities to what I see Griezmann doing in this tournament.
Okay. Schwinn?
Look, going off the same logic, it has to be someone who makes a deep run into the tournament and possibly even wins the tournament. And for me, it has to be Mesut Ozil then, because as Tony said it, you know, the German attack goes through him, and being in the number being the number 10 position, he's very crucial to their play. Of course, they have the likes of Sané, Timo Werner, who are, you know, who've come up the ranks, but you know, Mesut Ozil keeps them ticking, and we know Yogi Löw loves him. Last tournament, he had a brilliant one. You know, I mean, so much so that Michel Platini went up to him and asked for his shirt. He goes under the radar a bit, and he might not win the best player accolade, but you know, I'll keep a close eye on him and definitely be rooting for him.
Okay, I'm going to go Messi. I think Argentina are going to depend on him to get, and I think, you know, he wants that World Cup. He's going to take Argentina all the way, and I really think he'll be the man to get the player of the tournament. Top goal scorer, Tony?
I found this hard to call because it depends who's going to go deep in the tournament. Obviously, I would expect the team that goes furthest to obviously they're going to have more games, and they're more likely to score goals. So I've gone Griezmann again because I expect France to get far, and if he's going to be anywhere near the player of the tournament, he's going to need to score a lot of goals. So I think they kind of go hand in hand somewhat. So I've gone Griezmann for both.
Okay, Schwinn?
Tommy Moore, when the World Cup comes knocking, that man finds a shooting boot. And if Germany are to make a deep run and go and win it all, then I think he'll be crucial for them.
Okay, I've gone... I should have thought about this a bit more now, because I've actually gone Cavani. And it was only on the back of the qualifying. I think he's he's got about 10 goals he got through in the qualifying. And I thought, if you're going to go through the tournament, you know, like Russia, Saudi Arabia and Egypt, I can see plenty of goals there. So that's the basis I looked at it. I didn't think too far apart ahead of that. So I'll have to stick with it, but I'll have to, yeah, I'll just say Cavani. On the hope that Uruguay continue past the next 16. And who do you say they come up against again? Colombia.
They would play the runner-up of Group B, and according to your prediction, that would be Portugal.
Mm. Okay, so it's going to be a tough one. But anyway, okay, we'll have to stick with it. If they're going to do well, it's going to be Cavani or Suarez. So Suarez from, you know, they've got a big score of goals. So, yeah, stick with Cavani. Best young player, Tony?
So when I tweeted this out, I put Goretzka. But I was wrong, because I think it'll be Leroy Sané, because I'm not sure if Goretzka will even play. I think he's an amazing player, but Germany have got a squad littered with amazing players, whereas Sané, who I also think is an amazing player, I don't think there's too much in his way. I mean, I know in previous tournaments they've played Draxler on the left, and for me Sané's a few levels above Draxler, so I would imagine he would start. I really rate Marco Reus, but he's not had the season that Sané's had, and he also always comes with injury worries. So I'd imagine Sané will probably start, and it will give him his chance to shine.
Okay.
So Sané for me.
Yeah, okay. Schwinn, who's your best young player, mate?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be from a team that, again, you know, makes a deep run, and they get to play a whole lot. You know, when I look at those criteria, I can see Asensio maybe getting a look in every now and then. Although Spain has a very, very good starting 11, so I don't think he'll start, but I think he'll get some time. Another one is Ousmane Dembele, who also might get a look in every now and then. But I'll go for Gabi Jesus, because I think he'll get a lot of time in that Brazil team, and for me, they'll make the finals. So for me, Gabi Jesus. But there's so many good young players that are going to be featuring this World Cup, and I think they deserve a shout. So once you've said your player, Tez, I'll probably name just a few to watch out for.
Yeah, I was going to do the same as well.
Okay, well, I've just gone Mbappe, boys. I don't know whether it's probably a coincidental, but that you're probably going to mention his name as well. But, you know, he's had a great season for PSG, and now it's his chance now to step up on the world stage. So I think France will go through a long way into the tournament, and he'll feature heavily. So yeah, Mbappe. Who wants to?
You reckon he's going to start?
That was my issue. That's what I was going to ask. For me, he is the best under 21 player in the world by a distance as well, in my opinion. But France play a very rigid system, and they're going to play Griezmann off Giroud, and then they won't really have too much whip, or they might play whip on one side. So the issue with Mbappe is if he's going to play, and I'm not sure if he will. I rate him so highly, but that was the reason I didn't say him was I'm not sure if he'll get game time.
Payet didn't. He didn't make the French squad, did he?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I think he probably will start, but you're right. It just depends on how they do set up. I'm just thinking Kante, Pogba.
I mean, that's the problem. You can name sort of nine now.
You've set up, yeah.
But yeah, that's the thing. They're going to have a back five. I mean, sorry, a keeper and then four defenders. And then Pogba, Kante are guaranteed. Griezmann and Giroud are pretty much guaranteed. So yeah, then you've got to pick two more players to play. You'd imagine one of them will be a centre midfielder to allow Pogba to roam clear. And then it's where the other one comes in. Previously, it was a Payet type player. So can half create whip, but is more of a creator. But obviously he's not there, so it's how they're going to set up. If they're going for an out-and-out winger, I'd probably say they'd play Dembele over Mbappe, because he is more of a wide man that's going to go and beat people.
Mm. So that's what I was going to get to, Tony, because if Dembele plays, he probably would want to play on the right wing. I think coming back to your point about two players.
Yeah. Sorry, Gashwin.
I think coming back to Tony's point about two players, I think Matuidi will play, because that will give Pogba some freedom. And
yeah, Deschamps, that's what I said. You assume one of them is a centre midfielder.
Right. And the other one might be Mbappe on the left wing, because, you know, he gives them the option of stretching the pitch, and he has decent combination play as well. So it could be Griezmann, Oli, and Mbappe up top.
Yeah, I was just about to say maybe Mbappe, Griezmann, and Dembélé as well. So, yeah, up top. But they'll switch around. They won't play that all the way, will they?
Well, I would imagine Oli plays.
Sorry, Shrew?
I would imagine Giroud plays. I think Deschamps is a big fan, and I would imagine he starts.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other young players, Tony?
No, Mbappe was the one I just really wanted to mention, because, as I said, I do highly rate him, and I think he is the best young player in the world, but I didn't think anyone would say him due to not getting minutes.
Yeah.
So that's why I was going to say him, because I thought we would all ignore him because we thought he might not start.
Yeah, okay. Schwinn, you had a couple more on there?
Yeah, well, there's Milinkovic-Savic, who's obviously a known player from Lazio, and we know Tez is a big fan of most Lazio players. That's one to keep an eye out on.
Waste of space.
I don't think Serbia is going to do much damage, but he's obviously a bright, bright talent. Bentancur from Uruguay, another one to keep an eye out on. Christian Pavel, Argentina. Who else? Looking for the teams here.
I'm just going to cut you off quickly, because you may say this guy, and I've actually put him as my surprise of the tournament. I was like, do I put him as my best young player? And then I was like, Mbappe is probably cool. But I went with a young Mexican player, Herving Lozano, 22-year-old Mexican, plays for the Dutch team PSV. So reading lots about him, I haven't seen too much of him, but they really reckon they rate this kid, and Mexico have put in a lot of effort to say basically he's our hope for the World Cup. So I think, well, maybe he may be the surprise. I put him as my surprise of the tournament, so whether I've gave that away too early, but whether I should have maybe put him as my best young player.
No, that's a very good shout, because I think I wouldn't have said him, because I looked over Mexico right now and I didn't think of him, but that's a very, very good shout. I think in the winter, this past winter, we were linked with him as well, which obviously doesn't mean a whole lot, but at least, you know, that there's some sort of standard there. But as I'm looking through these other teams, Iran have a very good player in Sardar Azmoun, who is, again, a young prospect, he was very, very good for them in the qualifiers. Mm-hmm. And then Denmark have Sisto, Pione Sisto, I think is his name, who's obviously a very quick and flair sort of player who plays on the wings for them. So there are some young players who might not make it deep into the tournament and hence might not win the Young Player Award. But that doesn't mean that, you know, they're not bright and will, you know, probably end up getting a move to a big club in Europe at some point.
And being Australia, I better give a couple of shout-outs here. Daniel Azenoi, he's heavily rated, and they're saying that he's expecting big things of him. He's going to be like the next Aaron Moyes. Probably will make an appearance somewhere in the Premier League, like a lower team. So they are looking out on him. And I don't know if you remember, I think in the Europa, in the Euros, Lounga, he had a pretty good tournament too. So he plays for Queen's Park Rangers at the moment. So just a couple of Aussies to look out for as well.
I've just realised who you were trying to say. He's from your own country and you can't say his name. Massimo Lounga.
Yeah, Massimo Luongo.
Jeez, can you pronounce anything?
I'm hopeless. I'm hopeless. Luongo. Luongo. So a couple of Aussies to look out for as well. Who else is in that team? Jimmy Cahill, obviously. Matthew Lecky. Tommy Jurek. Yeah, okay. Righto, continue on. Well, you're waiting for me to continue, aren't we? Top scorer, best young player, best performing gunner, Tony.
I'm going to essentially renew my contract on this podcast and get a rise here and say Granit Xhaka.
Woo!
I think he's very key to that Switzerland team. Everything goes through him. They build up quite slow, but everything, the centre-backs give him the ball when he starts all attacks. He obviously takes a lot of set pieces as well. Tends to not take the shooting ones. Shaqiri takes them, but from like crossable areas, corners, and wide free kicks, he tends to take. So it's a chance for him to gain some assists. Obviously, his passing accuracy will be high. It'll be in the mid-80s throughout the whole tournament, which I'd imagine will be one of the highest. So for me, I think it'll be Granit. Maybe not the best performing. I'm not saying he's going to go furthest in the tournament, but I think it'll be the one that people come out and think, oh, he done better than I thought. Whereas for Ozil to do better than he thought, he'd have to get about 800 assists. And then they'll go, oh, maybe he is a good player.
Well, do you reckon you know who Schwinn will say?
Just an inkling. Alex Iwobi.
Right, Ashwin. Let her rip, mate. Who's your best performer, Gunner?
Look, I want to say Granit Xhaka, but, you know, I keep coming back to how deep teams will go and, you know, how crucial they are to perform, you know, to win stuff. And it has to be Mesut Ozil for me. If I'm saying that Germany is going to win it all and, you know, he's going to be crucial to them, then it would be hypocritical of me to not give him a shot for this.
Hmm. Yeah, I know. Just enlighten me for a minute. What's he got to do to be the best, though?
To be recognised as the best, he needs to be...
Well, I'm thinking, like, he's probably, you know... What are you expecting out of him? Like, he's obviously going to have a fair few assists there. But for you, what's the bar?
For me, it's not even the assists. I think it was Thomas Muller who once said that, you know, that for in a 90-minute match, you only have the ball on you for 2 minutes. So it's what you do off the ball. And, you know, Pep Guardiola said this, that if you watch football, you won't understand Mesut Ozil, but if you watch Mesut Ozil, you'll understand football. And a lot of the stuff he does off the ball, whether it's, you know, making decoy runs or even walking into open spaces, that helps his team a lot. And that's one of the main reasons that he'll never be acknowledged the way he needs to be. But he makes so much sense when you just watch him and, you know, those runs, those moves he makes. And even though he's so single-footed, I mean, I can go on and on, Mesut Ozil, I'll probably stop here, but despite being so single-footed, he's very, very good at using that one foot to his advantage. So I don't think he's going to be given any award, even though I do say that he's going to be the best player of the tournament. But there's a lot he does off the ball that coaches tend to love and appreciate.
Okay. And Tony says, watch football with your eyes, just while we're quoting stuff. Yeah, I'm going to go Xhaka. Of course I've got a Granit Xhaka. He will be my best performing gunner. He will be my love of my life, boys. he will be the best player in an Arsenal shirt next year as well. I won't go down too much on that. Do you reckon he'll... A few people were saying that bloody he won't even start next season. Wake up. Okay, so surprise of the tournament. I said mine already. So, Tony?
If we're doing it in terms of player, I'm going to... I think this answer varies by where you are. And in England, every non-Arsenal fan seems to think Granit Xhaka's shit. And he won't be shit in this tournament. And he hasn't been shit for Arsenal. So I think he will shock a lot of people in England and we'll get a lot of headlines, I'd imagine, saying, oh, I can't do that at Arsenal. Why is he so much better? And he won't be doing anything different. It's just he won't be wearing an Arsenal shirt, so he'll get rated for it. So in terms of a player, and again, it's not saying I expect him to go far in the tournament, but I think he'll get a lot of the headlines. Oh, he doesn't usually do that, and now he is doing that. It's a surprise. But for anyone that actually watches him, it won't be a surprise.
The only reason I didn't say that is because I didn't want to be like you and Shree the Gooner, so... Yeah. You're copying Shree now, are you?
Is that what you said?
I think so. I think it was Shree who said it. I did see one of our listeners said Xhaka for both of them because he actually made a mention that Tez will be having a wank or something over his two. So it was two in a row where he mentioned Shaka, but I just can't remember which ones. I haven't got it in front of me, so.
That was Glenn, wasn't it?
Was it Glenn, was it? It was somebody, one of our listeners, yeah. So.
Well, the one who mentioned the wank-off was I think, Glenn. Yeah. I'm not sure if he mentioned Shaka in both categories, though.
Probably would be Glenn. Fucking wanker. Okay. Schwinn, what was yours?
It will be. I think he will surprise a lot of people, and I've gone for an Arsenal player in this category and not looked beyond because he's had a horrid season. I don't think there's any other way of really putting that, but he comes to life in the Nigeria kit, and this is an incentive for him to perform the world stage, and of course the new manager on who's probably going to be watching him as well. So this tournament could really define him. And his short-term future. And although I don't think Nigeria is going to go far, but I think he's going to have a very, very good tournament.
Okay. Next one is predictions. So we're after a winner, final and third spot. Tony?
Again, I haven't looked into the draw, so I may say teams that will end up catching each other and it can't work out. So I'm just going to go over top three of Germany to win it. As I said, in my head, I would have Germany, France to be runners-up, but I don't know how that goes with the draw.
Yep.
And Brazil as the third. But again, with the way to draw, it could be Germany play France in the semi, so that's obviously impossible. Yeah, we're also, yeah. So I think them three will be top three, but I don't know how it works out with the draw.
Yep, yep.
No, that works out. That would mean, of course, Germany plays France in the final, which is very much possible, and that would mean Brazil plays Argentina in the third place knockoff. So that is definitely possible.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I would have gone without looking at the draw. So I'm glad it works out, and I don't look like an idiot.
Schwinn.
For me, the final will be Germany Brazil, with Germany winning it, and of course Brazil coming second. And the third place playoff will be between France and Argentina, and Argentina wins it.
Okay, I've gone, the final will be Germany and Argentina. I've gone France for third, and I think I've put Spain for them. Let me have a look now.
Spain have been really under-mentioned by everyone for this World Cup.
Yeah, I know. No, but I didn't go Spain, I went Uruguay. So France and Uruguay. But I, like I said, as Tony said, I haven't looked at the draw, Schwinn, so I don't know whether
that... Yeah, I'm not sure that works out, if I'm honest, because I think France, if Uruguay is to proceed in the tournament, and so is France, then that means France and Uruguay square off in the quarterfinals.
Okay. So I've probably got to throw
Spain. So that wouldn't be possible. So
I've probably got to throw Spain in there, I suppose. Where were they? Spain are the underdogs, you know, aren't they? They've gone no headlines either. They got a good team.
Yeah, I mean, I think underdogs may be a bit of a strong phase, but they've gone completely under the radar.
And they've left a lot of good players out of the squad as well. I mean, Cesc Fabregas, Morata, Marcus Alonso, and I'm sure I'm missing out on some other names as well. But they've left a decent amount of players, which is always, you know, a sign of confidence of what's going on behind the scenes.
Can Spain and France meet there?
Spain and France can meet. If they were to meet, they would meet in the third place playoff, not before.
Okay. Well, I'll just stick with them three teams. Germany, Argentina final, and France to come third somehow. Now, because actually, just as you mentioned a minute ago, Brazil, nobody's really mentioned much about Brazil. Schwinn did say that just then, and that's probably the first mention on this podcast with Brazil. So where do you think Brazil are situated, Tony? You haven't mentioned much of them?
I think they're very good going forward. I think they're probably going to be too reliant on Neymar, even when they don't need to be, because they've got other players around him, but I think they're quite weak in other areas. Very good keeper, whichever one they choose. They've got two very good keepers. They got the best left back in the world for me. But I think they're shaky all over. I mean, I'm assuming that Thiago Silva is going to be their starting centre back, and I think he's a long time past it. So I think as soon as they come up against a top team, I think they'll probably go out. And so I don't know when that is on the draw that they come up against the top team, probably the semis.
Yeah, okay. And Schwinn, you've got them going all the way to the final, mate, to play against Germany. So you're confident?
I do. I think they have a lot of firepower. And I'm sure from last tournament, which of course didn't end well for them, and not even for Neymar, I think there's going to be a fire lit under their belly. The first hurdle I see for them, big time hurdle, is if Belgium do make it through the round of 16, that would mean Belgium versus Brazil in the quarterfinal, which at that point can be a very tricky tie. Yeah. But for me, Belgium are not going to make it. So it's going to be Brazil versus Poland, which would mean France against Brazil in the semifinal afterwards. So they have, as Tony said, they have some gaping holes, but I think their firepower is so good and so potent that they'll make it to the finals. And then, of course, lose to Germany.
Okay. So just looking at the odds, so Brazil are actually equal favourites with Germany at $5.50, followed by France, Spain at $7, Argentina at $10, Belgium at $11, England at $15, Portugal $26, Uruguay $26, Colombia $34, and then you're getting out to $34 for Croatia, Poland $41. Russia's an interesting one. They've got them at $41 to win the tournament. no one had a dark horse on them. Denmark, Mexico, Sweden at 81s, and then your Switzerland's the 101s. Just looking. Nigeria, that was the other one that I was looking with interest, at $151. So for our African listeners. And Australia's not all that bad, Tony, because we are above Costa Rica, Morocco, South Korea, Iran, Panama, Australia at $251. Not a bad bet. Get on it. Get on it.
Once again, we are not suggesting that people should be betting.
I am.
Tez is just saying that. Okay, never mind.
No. I mean, he calls them Ladbrokes because if he bets on Australia, he's going to be a lad that's broke.
I'm broke, lad. I'm always a broke lad. look, just quickly, I'll just give a couple of shout-outs, and I'll do this quickly. So, yeah, Shree did mention his worst team. Now, I'll just kind of basically mention the best performing gunner. So Shree was saying Xhaka, surprise of tournament. He was also saying Xhaka. Couple others. Martin, he said disappointing team was Portugal, surprise, best young player, top goal scorer, he was saying Suarez. Who else we got? Martin also said the easiest group is Group C, boys, and the group of death, he's wrote F, then B. Best player, Neymar. Bernie, 56. He says the winner, Germany. Second, Brazil. Third, Portugal.
So we've retweeted everyone that's come back to us with answers. We've retweeted them for everyone to see. So you can see them all there. But also, if anyone else wants to, most people will disagree with what we've said. Tweet us with your answers and we'll retweet them, and then at the end of the tournament we'll hopefully have a bank of hopefully 50 plus answers from people, and we can all laugh at each other's stupid predictions.
Yeah, so it's all a bit of fun. Also, we've got the sweep going, £10, isn't it, Tony? You can pay via PayPal or something.
Yeah, so £10 entry. I think we've got about 10 of the spaces filled up already. Obviously three of us are in there. We've not done the draw yet until we're full up. I think some of your favourite household appliance in the nose and some of your favourite animal in the nose are also in the sweepstake. And there'll be prizes for winner, runner-up, surprise package, and worst team. There'll be some financial reward. We're not making any money on it. Every penny that comes back in will go back out as prize money. It's just for a bit of fun, and it gives you someone to support, or if you're hoping for your team to be the worst performing, someone to be against. If your team's not playing, it gives you a bit of interest in the games.
Yep, that sounds good. Now, just while you're talking about that, before we wrap up, boys, and while you're talking about animal in the nose, I've got a bone to pick. I've got a fucking bone to pick. Now, it's good to see that our listeners are listening to this podcast, and it's really great. But, however, what do I get
for the clown who decided to make a in-the-know kangaroo account. The kangaroo fucking... I don't know. I haven't got it up here in front of me now.
AFC Kanga, innit?
AFC Kanga. Now, let me tell you, mate. Over in Australia, Avery, mate, we don't call it a fucking Kanga for a starter, right? It was a piss take to start with, but now this bloke's taking it serious, and it's like, give up, seriously. These ITK accounts, look, some of them are all right, I guess. Some of them might get a bit of news through, but the old AFC Kanga has created the account on the back of listening to this podcast, so... I don't know whether I feel privileged that he's named it after something that we said or what, boys. Yeah, anyway, that's my little bone. I better not go too much because I'll end up getting in the shit. But just deactivate it, you useless cunt. Okay. Just quickly, do we want to... is there any Arsenal news, Tony, that we want to quickly discuss?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, we've been linked with Lichtsteiner. He was at London Colney having discussions, I believe, yesterday. So Friday in the UK, obviously, whenever people are listening to this, it may be different. Interestingly, when I was working with an agent in 2013, I believe it was, and Lichtsteiner's agent at the time was constantly ringing, trying to get him a move to the Premier League because he was only on about £30,000 a week at Juventus. Mm-hmm. And at that time, obviously, he would have commanded more money and a fee, being obviously in his late 20s then. And he wasn't seen as... So the agent I was working with said, look, no top team will take him, and he's probably not going to get the money or the transfer fee that the club would want for him at a middle-of-the-road team. There wasn't as much money further down the Premier League then. So he has been looking at an interest in playing in England for a long time. I don't know how close the deal is to being done. He's obviously a free agent, so there's quite a few teams talking to him, I'm led to believe. I don't think many will be as an attractive offer as Arsenal, but it's ever he may want to go somewhere and play, and he knows he's not going to be first choice at Arsenal. So, I mean, that's what we're looking at the moment. That Lichtsteiner is a potential in, but there's not been much else in the way of news, proper news. There's been, obviously, press links with players all over the place, but that's what happens in silly season. Mm-hmm. But Lichtsteiner is the only sort of concrete bit of information, shall we say, that's come out since we last recorded.
What's your thoughts on him coming to Arsenal as obviously a backup?
Yeah, I think, look, again, I've said this before, we're going to play over 50 games this season. And this season's just gone. We suffered massively from Hector having to play pretty much every week. And if he didn't play, we had makeshifts or nothing against Debuchy. I thought he was a good player, but he was never fit enough to be able to properly stand in. And it also meant Hector had no competition. So I think Lichtsteiner is a smart signing, a very shrewd signing if it does come off. I also think it means great things for Maitland-Niles because now he won't be seen as a utility guy that can play here and can play there. For me, if we do bring Lichtsteiner in, that says to Maitland-Niles, you are contending for a centre midfielder spot, focus all your energy on centre midfield, and if you perform the way we know you can, you'll be playing in centre midfield. Yeah. So I think it's a very good signing for Maitland-Niles as well, if it happens.
If he comes in, do you see Chambers or a defender leaving on loan, maybe?
No, I don't think it impacts any of the centre backs, and we're short on right backs. We were short anyway, and we sold Debuchy in January or let him go in January. Yep. So we only actually had, from January onwards, we had one right back. I've said Maitland-Niles done a job there. Chambers played there a couple of times, but neither of them want to play there. So I don't think that affects things elsewhere. I don't think Lichtsteiner in would mean someone else would be going out.
Okay, and that's a free, isn't it?
Yeah, so he's out of contract at Juventus, so it'd be a completely free sign-in. Obviously, there'd just be a terms of you'd have to pay him a sign-on fee and wages because he won't work for free. He's selfish like that.
Yeah, obviously. Now, my thoughts were, look, I think it's a good signing, but the age barrier was a worry for me. At 34, I think, oh, geez, are we going down to that? Are we going down that path of signing these older players? That's my worry. But you reckon he'll be
I think I would worry if it was someone that was earmarked as being a first-team player, but he's there to fill the gap. So when Hector can't play three games a week every week, you get him to step in, and it's a good experience, someone that's probably good to have around the camp. Mm. Been there and done it, been to two Champions League finals off the top of my head, maybe more. So it's just someone good to have around. As I said, I would worry about that if it was a first team player, someone you're looking to build a team around or whatever. But for someone just to plug a gap, to be a second choice right back, you're either going to have to get someone young or someone old. And I'd prefer someone that's proven and done it rather than someone who may be good, but you're not quite sure.
Yeah, okay. This probably means Bellerin sticking around too.
It looks it. I mean, obviously, he took the number two shirt as well, which doesn't mean anything, but he'd said previously in interviews, I've told the kit men give me number two next year, and now he's taken number two next year, so it seems like an indication that he's going to hang around.
Yeah. Was it yesterday, Jack? People were talking about some stuff that was on his Instagram account. Jack Wilshere I'm talking about here. And there was something on his Twitter account. Looked like he was staying or going.
No, so it was a strange one because someone noticed that Jack no longer has Arsenal player written in his bio on Twitter. It just says Nike athlete and dad to whatever his kids' names are. But he hasn't had that for a while. I think when he went to Bournemouth, I don't think he put Bournemouth in it. I think he had pretty much the same as he has now. And then when he came back to Arsenal, he didn't put Arsenal back in. Someone noticed that yesterday and brought it up. But as I said, it's been like that for at least a year, if not two. He did do a thing he did put a post on Instagram as a picture of these two kids and him on the pitch at the Emirates saying, I love my kids, blah, blah, blah. On to new adventures or something along those lines, new adventures coming, or again, I'm not quoting it. And a lot of people have read that as taking that as, he's going somewhere new. They may be having to move house, so it's a new adventure for them. But on the other hand, he's just had a baby who's less than a month old. Arsenal have obviously got a new manager, so he could mean new adventure in that sense. Mm. Obviously, the kids now have a new sibling, and he's going to be working under a different boss. So I think people are just guessing based on that post. I don't know either way. What I do find surprising, and I tweeted this out yesterday, is that last Thursday, Arsenal brought him and Ramsey in for a photo shoot in the new kit. And no player would have been in beyond last Monday unless they're in for treatment. So we've seen pictures of Koscielny meeting Emery, but no other players. That's because he needs treatment on his injury, but no one else will be there. They'll be on their holidays or whatnot.
Yeah.
So to bring him in seems really weird to me because if he's out of contract, he's done. He doesn't have to come in anymore. It's not like he was just in the building, so they thought, oh, we'll take some pictures. Mm. They brought him in specifically to take them pictures. And if they knew that he wasn't going to sign a contract, it would just seem like a waste of absolutely everyone's time. I'm not saying it indicates he's definitely going to sign. I just don't understand why they would do it. It wastes the photographer's time. It wastes Jack's time. It wastes, as I said, absolutely everyone. There's nothing to gain from anyone from doing that. Mm. So it just, for me, that seemed weird. And people have said, that Fabregas and Van Persie were pictured in contracts and in the kit, and then they went on to leave. The difference is Jack is essentially unemployed. His contract runs out on the 1st of June, but from, I think it would have been about the 13th of May, no player would have been in. So although his contract runs to the 1st of June, he's essentially unemployed from May the 13th. So to bring him in on the 15th, or the 18th, I think it was, as I said, it's just weird. It doesn't mean anything. It's just, I find it very strange.
Yeah. So he'll have to wait till 1st of June to just, you know, have a look around, or would his agent be looking around now, you think?
His agent would have been looking around for probably 8 months. So they can't announce anything if he's going elsewhere until the 1st of June. Well, they can. Most teams do, especially once the season's over, he can announce it. But technically, you can't actually sign for anyone until the 1st of June, and pre-season obviously starts the 1st of July.
So he'll stop getting paid as of the 1st of June for Arsenal.
Yeah, but what tends to happen is contracts run to different clubs do it differently. Yeah? They either run from the 1st of June to the 1st of June, if like whatever year, if it's a year deal, or July, 1st of July, 1st of July. So it depends on the club. But most clubs, they see it as obviously the season is over from whatever day the season finishes, which I think was maybe 11th or something like that. Mm. So most clubs are happy for you to start announcing things as the season's over. As I said, they're not in from a day after, so the Monday after the Huddersfield games would have been the last day that any player would have been in at the training ground. So, and most clubs are more than happy for you to start announcing things the day after that, because you can't disrupt anyone. There's no one there anyway. But technically, as I said, I think it would be the 1st of June with Arsenal, but it could be the 1st of July that he's technically employed to.
Okay. No worries. That's about all that's happening around the club.
Yeah, obviously we announced the Rwanda sleeve thing. We didn't. That came after our last podcast, so yep. It's the joint biggest sleeve sponsorship deal in the Premier League. Adds an extra $10 million to our hitty. I think it will go on a wages fund, not a transfer fund. I spoke in depth in January about how we were having big issues with wages and meeting the wage quota. Yep. But I think this $10 million will massively help in that sense. We've also increased our sponsorship deal with the Emirates earlier in the season, so.
People said it was an odd sponsor, but mate, if it's got bringing in the money, do you really care?
No, yeah, exactly that. I don't think they as long as it's not an oppressive regime or something like that, or something that promotes hate or whatever. I don't think the club particularly care. It brings the money in, and it's a weird one with sleeve sponsorships, because they tend to be not really big companies, and they can be absolutely anything. I mean, we've seen Angry Birds at Everton. We've seen Chelsea have got a tyre company. I think City have also got a tyre company. They just seem to be sort of anything random. But as I said, clubs don't really care if you pay the money. And in terms of, it's nowhere near as expensive as the main sponsorship on the shirt. So you can get smaller companies or smaller organisations like Visit Rwanda or Angry Birds that can afford these sponsorships, where there's no way they'd be able to afford the main sponsorship.
I think last season I spoke to you about sponsorships regarding at the ground. Is there any more money we can suck out of sponsorships around the ground?
Probably. I mean, we've done the dugout now, that's that BYD, the Chinese car company, Build Your Dreams.
Yep, that's right, yep.
I mean, look, there's always, football clubs tend to have a partner for everything. They don't have an official watch partner, an official water or energy drink partner. They'll have partners for absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So there probably is small sponsorships that could be eked out, but I think most of the big ones are done now. I can't see any more big ones coming on board, because there's nothing major that's left unsponsored at the moment. Now we've got the sleeve and the dugout done. Yeah. I think all the major things you see have sponsorships. We might not have a chose, like, I mean, we recently announced a cryptocurrency one in, I think, in February. But that's not a major one. I couldn't even tell you their name, and we've announced sponsorship. So you might get small ones like that, but there won't be anything big, I don't think.
Okay. And just to tidy up before we go, we have discussed previously on podcast the appointment of our new manager isn't, well, it's not actually a manager. It is a coach. So just quickly, because I have seen it being discussed on Twitter and whatnot, you know, people don't like the term coach. They prefer the term manager. For those people, just quickly, why is it coach to manager?
Well, it's a completely different job. He's head coach, which means he deals with essentially just the footballing side of things. He picks the team, he trains the players, he's their coach, but he doesn't get involved in the business side of things. Obviously, he will recommend players and he'll have discussions with the recruitment team who will bring in players, but it's not purely on his say. I mean, you can imagine if he really wants a player, he can suggest him very strongly, and the recruitment team will have to take on board what he has to say. But it's not the case of, if he really wants a player, he can just go and get them. It has to go through this recruitment team, and he won't have to worry himself with negotiations or wages and stuff like that. All the stuff that Wenger that people criticise Wenger for having to do too much, they've just taken that work off his plate. I've also seen a lot of people moan that his reported salary is a lot less than what Wenger's was. But that was always going to happen, because he's doing a lot less of a job. I don't mean in terms of results, obviously we don't know that yet, but he has to deal with a lot less things. So the salary's going to be less. And reportedly, I don't know how true this is, but one of the early issues with Allegri, apparently, was that he wanted similar wages to Wenger. Obviously, he was on $3 million at Juventus, and they thought, his camp or him personally thought, if I come over to England, I'll be on $8-9 million a year, the same as Wenger, or $10 million a year. Whereas Arsenal weren't looking to offer anywhere near that much, because they were diluting the role, which means instead of just paying Wenger. They now have to pay Raul. They have to play Sven. So that money's come out of the manager's budget because there is a manager anymore. It's like three people are now doing the job that Wenger was doing, essentially. So I don't see it as Wenger's been replaced by Unai Emery. I see it as Wenger's being replaced by Sven, Unai Emery, and to an extent, Raul.
Yeah, and I prefer it that way. I like my, Emery to just concentrate on the football. You know, don't worry about all that back end and stuff. It's how well
the communication is between them people behind him. Because there's been horror stories, especially in English football, where, as I said, I always bring it up, but Kevin Keegan in his second stint as Newcastle manager said he turned up one day and there was a player he didn't know who it was, and he was there training, and another player that weren't there, and he was asking like his assistants what's happened as he called in sick, and they went, oh no, he's been sold.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously, there's an example of terrible communication there. So how successful this system is all depends on how good the communication is between the three people, the teams of people. So between the football side, the business side, the contract side, it's all on how good the communication is between them. We'll see if this is a success or a failure.
Yeah, okay. Right, well, that's about it. Schwinn has left us because he's rushing off to watch a Champions League final. So next week we'll do it all again.
Yeah, hopefully a few more signings to talk about. Obviously, the World Cup still weren't kicked off then. I'm not sure when the first international friendlies are. We may catch one or two of them. There may be one or two of them to talk about. I'm not 100% sure.
Yep.
But hopefully we've got something to talk about.
Yeah, we might even discuss on the the Champions League final that we're just about to watch, and we might be able to even have a look at who is coming up to the Premier League and what to expect out of them next year. So okay, well, thank you for listening and thank you for downloading, and you can follow us at clockend_talk. We'll speak to you next week. Bye.
Thank you.